Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Quick clip!
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schleck. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get The Athletic for $1 a month. If you haven't done that yet, it's time. Go do it. The deal's not going to get any better than that. So go do it today. Before we get to what happened in the NBA this week and my co-host Alex Spears, I want to give a quick shout out to Jonathan Charks on an article that he wrote this week on theringer.com. It's titled, "Does My Son Know You?" You can go find it on his Twitter at Jonathan Charks, T-J-A-R-K-S. Wow, it was one of the more raw, vulnerable articles I've ever read. And to be honest, I read this with my wife, and we were both crying by the end of it because of how powerful it was and how centered it was and how just honest it was. It talks about Jonathan's struggle with terminal cancer that he's going through right now, and then what's going to happen to his son and his wife whenever he's gone. He talked a little bit about how his life as a boy could mirror what could happen to his son and what he wants to see different. And essentially what he wants to see that's different is that he wants to see people show up. He wants to see people show up for his kid. And it was especially heartfelt for us, for my wife and I, because we're seeing this play out in our own church community. And I reached out to a buddy right after who is displaying just what Jonathan is hoping for his son. And, you know, just to let him know, like, what you're doing is just so important. And here's an example why. So, huge shout out to Jonathan for being vulnerable and just an incredible writer, number one. But then just sharing what he shared meant a lot to me. And meant a lot to me, not only seeing it in my community, but just as a father, it is very grounding and humbling, and it just really pinpoints what matters most. So go check that out. And now, without further ado, Alex, what happened in the NBA this week?
Well, Andrew, is the first full week after the All-Star game, and it started off last Friday night with James Harden's Sixers debut. The Sixers beat the Timberwolves in Minnesota 133-102 and are now 3-0 in the Harden era after two wins over the Knicks later in the week. Sixers fans are currently in a 24/7 state of euphoria, breaking out of their pre-deadline death spiral, reborn, energized, emboldened, attacking anyone who doubts this new era of Sixers basketball. And for those doubters out there, don't worry. You'll have your questions answered soon enough because this week, the Sixers play Cleveland, Miami, Chicago, and Brooklyn. On Saturday, it was the official start of Ja Morant week, a week that began with Ja dropping a jaw-dropping 46 points in a 116-110 win over the Chicago Bulls. For most players, scoring a career high would be enough. You've already had a great week. How can you top a career high? Well, you can score even more points, which is exactly what Ja did in his very next game when he dropped 52 in a 118-105 win over the Spurs. But not only that, he gave us two memorable highlights, a poster on Jakob Poeltl that is a Dunk of the Year candidate, and a falling out of bounds buzzer beater at the end of the first half featuring a full court pass from Steven Adams that's similar to his dunk a few minutes earlier has to be seen to be believed. On Sunday, the New Orleans Pelicans beat the Lakers 123-95 in LA. At the end of January, the Lakers had six more wins than the Pelicans. A month later, a CJ McCollum trade later, an AD injury later, the Pelicans are now only a game back of the Lakers for the ninth seed, who happen to have the second most difficult remaining schedule according to Tankathon.com. Since joining the Pelicans, CJ McCollum is putting up 26.5 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, while shooting 52% from the field and 42% from three. On Monday, The Timberwolves got a 127-122 win over the Cavs. They followed that up with a back-to-back win over Golden State. Those two wins, coupled with a surprising Nuggets loss at home to the Thunder on Wednesday, mean that the Wolves are now only a game and a half back of Denver. Now, is Denver still the favorite to hold on to the final non-play-in spot? Yes, but for fun, let's read off the Wolves' next five games. At OKC, Portland at home, Portland again at home, OKC at home, at Orlando. In other words, don't be surprised if the Wolves are on a seven-game winning streak the next time we talk and inching closer and closer to that sixth seed. On Tuesday, the Lakers won a game! Unfortunately, it was only a moral victory after they erased a 21-point lead against the Mavs before losing 109-105. The Mavs, on the other hand, have won 9 of their last 11 as they try to solidify their position as the fifth seed. Mavs superstar Luka Doncic was awarded the Player of the Month award for February, and if we just look at his last 9 games, Luka is averaging 36-10-7 while shooting 41% from 3. On Wednesday, we had another marquee matchup in the Eastern Conference, a potential preview of a future playoff series. It was the Heat at the Bucks. The Bucks rallied from a 14-point deficit with only 6 minutes left in the game to shock the Heat after Drew Holiday made the game-winning layup with 1.9 seconds left. Giannis had a 27-15-5 in the close win, while Jimmy Butler only scored 6 points in his 35 minutes, shooting 2 of 14 from the field. While Butler has never been known as a sharpshooter, it is worth noting that Butler is currently shooting 19% from 3 this season, his lowest percentage since his rookie season when he took 11 total threes. And finally, on Thursday night, the Boston Celtics, without Jaylen Brown, closed out Ja Morant week with a very convincing win over the Grizz, 120-107. Jason Tatum scored 37 in the win, which moved the Celtics ahead of the Cavs for the fifth seed. Since January 1st, the Celtics are one of only 3 teams with a top 10 offense and top 10 defense, joining Phoenix and Memphis. What a week it was, Andrew. All right, Andrew. This week, I wanted to talk about the future. When you go to a player's page on Basketball Reference, you can look at their stats split up in a variety of ways. How do they play on Sundays? How do they play in wins versus losses? One of my favorites is the pre-All-Star versus post-All-Star break split, because it's the only split with actual real time in between it. You know, like, looking at splits by month is fun, but months are kind of irrelevant. There's no reason a player would suddenly and dramatically change his game when the month changes from February 28th to March 1st. But the All-Star break split is different because players get an entire week off. Maybe there's been some roster changes at the deadline. Maybe the team installs some new plays. And sometimes a player becomes a much better version of themselves over that last stretch of the season. Now, oftentimes these are second or third year guys on teams outside of contention. We have 2 great examples from this year. First, Darius Garland, who last year was in his second season for a 22-wins Cavs team. After the All-Star break, there really wasn't a great reason to be watching the Cavs for the average NBA fan. But while we didn't watch, Darius Garland got significantly better. From pre- to post-All-Star break last season, Garland's true shooting jumped from 52% below league average to 57%, just above league average. He increased his points per game from 16 to 19 points per game. He shot over 40% from 3. All of this leading to a smart NBA writer, Jackson Frank, writing an article last May titled, "Is Darius Garland Quietly Rising to Stardom in Cleveland?" which we actually talked about. A year later, Garland is an All-Star, which, if you weren't watching Cavs games last spring, and why would you be, might have been a surprise if you hadn't read some of the articles about Garland last spring. Garland's post-All-Star break performance last year was his pre-jump. It was foreshadowing the giant jump he would take this season. Another example from this year, Miles Bridges, who was in his third year with Charlotte last year, had a similar pre-jump post-All-Star break. Points per game jumped from 10 to 16. He shot 41% from 3. He saw a jump in usage from 16 to 19%. Now Bridges is averaging 20 points per game, and while his shooting has fallen off from his hot start, everyone would recognize that Bridges is now in a completely different tier of player than he was before. And that pre-jump last spring was the clue for anyone watching that Miles Bridges had a much higher ceiling than we may have thought. So now, a week into the post-All-Star break period, I thought it'd be fun to nominate our choice for this year's pre-jump player 2022. The guy who we predict will be significantly better post-All-Star break and who will use this improved play to make an even bigger jump next season. We're getting in early. We're trying to outsmart the NBA smart guys. Now, me and Andrew, we've each chosen a player.
We have.
How we will determine a winner is either A, this player ends up...
a winner? Yes,
yeah, there's going to be a winner, Andrew.
Oh, no.
It's going to be months from now. How we will determine a winner is either A, this player either ends up being at least a legitimate candidate for most improved player next season.
Okay.
Or B, much easier, a smart national NBA writer with no team affiliation writes a long, deep dive piece on this player before the end of the season. And you may not cheat. I swear, Andrew.
I was going to say, do not ask Mark Schindler to do this for you, Al. Don't do it.
Oh, I was going to say, if you DM Mark Schindler and ask him to write an article about your guy, I will find out and you will automatically lose.
Okay, okay.
Now, I will say that as I was researching my player right at the end, I realized that Jackson Frank had already written an article about him in January. But the point is, we're predicting these players will be so much better than they have already been. Post-All-Star, the NBA writers will be forced to write another article about them. Okay, so it has to be a fresh article from here on out. Another disclaimer is that Andrew and I have agreed to not choose either of the Tyreses, Tyrese Haliburton or Tyrese Maxey. Yes, either of these two could improve in the stretch run and perform at an even higher level than they already have, but feels like the trains have already left the station. Everyone's
already
all aboard.
Good.
We're all choo-chooing together. Okay, yeah. It's too easy. But we are acknowledging that both of those players are very, very good. Could easily end up being the pre-jump players of 2022.
Maxey's already in a big three. You can't be in a big
He's already in a big three. You can't pick him for this. Okay, so Andrew, would you like to start us off with your nomination for pre-jump player 2022?
I would. I'm going to start with an Atlanta Hawks player. And we've talked a lot about how they need a consolidation trade, and it's usually around maybe one of the guards or maybe one of the forwards or just finding a way to punt Danilo Gallinari out of Atlanta somewhere. But I would say, I think maybe Clint Capella could be a part of a consolidation trade because of the way Onyeka Okongwu has played. This was their lottery pick from a couple years ago. And he started to show some signs of being a really elite player. This guy is an absolute monster on the defensive end. He isn't the biggest guy, but that actually kind of helps him in some ways because he's so quick and has got such good hands. If you look at some of the advanced stats, especially like shots at the rim, opponents shoot 37.1% at the rim when Okongwu is the defender, which just doesn't even make sense. And these are smaller samples with Okongwu because he hasn't played that many minutes yet this season. But even with that, it's just absolutely insane what he's able to do. He can cover a ton of ground, too. I think eventually he's going to be able to defend even out to the wing. So I think that this guy is going to help them with their versatility as a defensive team. And the Hawks just need help defensively in general. And then you look at the offensive end. Okongwu leads the Hawks with a 67.5% true shooting percentage and finishes at around the rim 83% of the time. It's just crazy. 56% true shooting. It's, to me, he's primed for another jump. If they will give him more minutes, if he can stay healthy is another big question. And then you even look at his on-offs. He's a plus 8.7 in 600 minutes for the Hawks this season. That's the best mark on the team. To me, it's clear that perhaps the Hawks hit the go button a little bit too fast, but because they have Onyeka Okongwu, they can dial it back and still move forward because they have this guy. And now they have guys like Clint Capella as a trade chip. I think there's a lot of teams that could use a Clint Capella on their team, who was very good for the Hawks in stretches. So the Hawks, while it doesn't look good today, I think that building a team with Trae Young and Onyeka Okongwu and Kevin Huerter and John Collins, like, that could still work because you still have a young developing big who I think could be one of the best defensive bigs in the league, and he has a growing offensive game.
I almost wonder if them continuing to lose would help your case more, because, like, what's going to be the thing that convinces them to start giving him more minutes? Because you look at his game logs, like, over this most recent stretch, like, yeah, there's a few games peppered in there where he, you know, has 27 minutes. Most of these games, he's playing like 16 to 20 minutes per game.
Sure.
And so, like, what's it going to take for them to make that sort of a switch? Is it them kind of realizing, like, this season isn't really going anywhere? We're holding on to the 10th seed, fighting off the Wizards of all teams. Like, should we just move forward and see what we have in Okongwu?
I think that part of it is probably health related. Like, I don't think that you want to give a guy who's had some health problems to start his career just a ton of minutes. So maybe this consolidation trade doesn't happen even this summer, but it's something that happens maybe in season next year or even the summer after that. But I do think there's a bright future for Okongwu. And Capella doesn't quite fit the timeline as much as Okongwu does. So to me, the Hawks always should have built more slowly. And they actually, Okongwu gives them a chance to kind of get a redo in some ways.
Okay. So you're going with Okongwu. Good luck, I say, on that.
He's like the total, the thing about him is, like, he's the total NBA smart guy in that no one is really noticing, right?
Well, I agree, and I think he could be a good choice, but, like, thinking of him post All-Star break, like, it would take a Capella injury at this point, it feels like, for him to get the type of minutes he would need to, because you look at his stats and there's plenty of room for growth. I mean, you think he's averaging like 8 and 5.
Yeah.
So, like, yes, he could obviously have a run here at the end of the season, but it's like, what is going to happen for the Hawks to actually do that? That's what I would be worried about.
It's a good question.
My choice for pre-jump player 2022 from the San Antonio Spurs, it's Devin Vassell. Now, before choosing Vassell, I targeted the Spurs as a team first for a few reasons. One, they're playing a lot of young guys. I have a lot of choices. Two, they will be playing meaningful games the rest of the season as they try to make the play-in. Who knows? Could they overtake the Lakers at some point, Andrew? They're only 2.5 games behind, I think. And three, they had a significant subtraction from the roster when they traded Derek White to Boston. And no player benefited more from that trade than Devin Vassell, who has started all 7 games since the deadline. Let's go back to Sam Vecenie's mock draft 4.0 in 2020 to see how Vassell was talked about coming into the draft. Sam wrote, quote, Vassell is a tailor-made role player due to his elite level shooting ability, as he hit 41.5% of his threes this season. And beyond that, he's an absolutely terrific wing defender with strong lateral quickness. Basically, this is your patented 3-and-D player. In his first 2 seasons, the 6'5 wing with a 6'10 wingspan has checked off the defensive checkbox on that 3-and-D label. In the Jackson Frank piece I mentioned earlier, he says, quote, conversations about Vassell's name appearing on all defensive teams are not far away. As for the 3 part of the 3-and-D label, that hasn't gone as smoothly. Vassell shot 34.7% from 3 in his rookie season, currently shooting 34.3% this year, 34.6% above the break, 34.1% corner threes. He's at least consistent across the board.
Very consistent.
Some good news, though, is that he's doubled his attempts from 2.5 per game to over 5 per game. And for a guy who shot only 68% from the line his freshman year, which is a stat that has some predictive value for future 3-point shooting, it's also good news that he has been an 80-plus percent free throw shooter both seasons in the NBA. Picking Vassell is partly a bet on him eventually fulfilling the pre-draft projections of him as a high-level shooter. But I'm not picking him just because I think he could become a 3-and-D player that he was projected to be. I'm picking him because I think he's going to be more than that. And now that Derek White is gone, now that he's a starter, we are starting to see that. He's been taking on more and more offensive responsibilities in the Spurs offense this season, and it's starting to pay off. In his last 4 games, now we're recording on a Wednesday night, had to record a little early this week, so if he plays, I'm assuming they play another game, maybe this will be wrong. In his last 4 games, He totaled 6, 4, 4, and 5 assists. Why is that significant? Before that run, Devin Vassell had never had 4-plus assists in 2 consecutive games before this last week. And he just did it for 4 straight games. I went back and watched those assists on NBA.com, and it's not like he's some hidden primary ball handler waiting to break out. But sure, he's running some pick and rolls. He's driving and kicking to 3-point shooters. He's making quick passes on the perimeter. He looks like he's something much more than just the 3-and-D archetype, which is obviously important for his ceiling. He also had his career high in points this past week in a game against Miami. The fit with DeJounte is important too. In 790 minutes with both of them on the court, the Spurs have a plus 5.2 net rating. Leave DeJounte on and take Vassell off. In those 1,100 minutes, the Spurs are only a positive 0.1 net rating. So plus 5 with both of those guys, only plus 1 when you take Vassell off.
Sounds like a smart guy.
Very smart. And as a bonus, I kind of like that Devin Vassell was miffed and peeved that he wasn't picked for the Rising Stars Challenge. Whatever motivation he needs to make this pre-jump, I'm all for. So you put all of that together, and it just feels like if he just starts to hit a few more of his threes, he is in the perfect situation to fully break out post-All-Star. For those reasons, he is my pre-jump player 2022.
I like that. I like that pick. The Spurs, they've got some guys.
Dude, when I went into this, I was going to pick Kellen Johnson first because I was listening to some pod and they brought up the fact that he was shooting over 40% from three, and it was just a stat I had not realized yet. And I started going into his game a bit more. He's another player like you could choose for this as well.
You could easily pick him. I've liked what I've seen from Josh Primo too. Like there's a reason that they were able to trade Derek White and feel fine about it and collect a future asset and move on, because they've got guys on this team that are ready to spread their wings. Even, and I'm not the biggest Lonnie Walker guy, but Lonnie Walker is still a guy that could be a breakout candidate for them too. Like they just have a lot of these wings that like one of them is eventually going to pop.
And if one of them does, and if it is Vassell, like that backcourt pairing defensively, like just so much wingspan.
Monstrous.
Amazing. Like I would be legitimately excited if one of these, if Devin Vassell is the one who pops out of all these guys and you have that backcourt, then you're bringing Josh Primo off the bench next year. Like that would be kind of exciting for a team that a few years ago we were like, I don't really even want to watch the Spurs.
Right. If I was a Spurs fan, I wish that they were a little bit worse, because this team is like dying for like a real star, like a primary guy.
Aren't they going to be one of the few teams with cap space? Who knows, Andrew? Who knows?
We're going to talk to our guy, Sam Vecenie, about the NBA draft right after this quick break.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. With March Madness right around the corner, I thought that we could check in on the potential lottery picks in the NBA draft. And who better to help us than the Athletic's own Sam Vecenie. Sam, how's it going?
Andrew Schlecht. Oh my God, it's been so long since we talked. It's the Saturday Slam and Jam. And you just heard, if you're listening to this podcast, I know that you just heard Andrew and I podcast on the Game Theory podcast earlier this week about rebuilding teams. I'm so excited to talk to Schlecht again because it's always fun. It's always a great time.
Oh, I'm so intrigued by this draft, in particular these top four guys. And the consensus top four in some order is Chet Holmgren, Jabari Smith, Paolo Banchero, and Jaden Ivey. Yeah. I'm curious your thoughts on which of these players has the most to prove in the NCAA tournament upcoming.
That is a great question. Honestly, I think the answer might surprise you. I think it might be Chet, to be real with it, because I think that some NBA teams, not all of them, but like a couple of NBA teams I've talked to, do have some level of, I don't want to say concern, but like some level of question regarding why Chet's numbers took such a leap in WCC play versus what they were early in the season when he was playing really great teams, right? And I think that we probably overanalyzed and got overly concerned about Chet based off of his early season play when you look back and, like, he wasn't that bad, right? Like, you go back and you watch the Duke game, like, yeah, Paolo got him in the first half, but Chet was undeniably the better player in the second half, and part of that had to do with Paolo cramping up and everything. But, even beyond that, I thought Chet played really, really well in the second half of that game. So I think that in order to be the number one overall pick in this draft, Chet is probably the player that is going to have to play well in this NCAA tournament. And I think that it's more of, like, you mentioned it's a four-person tier at the top. I see it personally as more of like a two and two tier.
Okay.
I have Jabari Smith and Chet Holmgren just a little bit ahead of Paolo and Jaden Ivey at this point. Mm-hmm. And Jabari Smith has done it against SEC players the entire year. I think that there's less concern about what he looks like against elite athleticism than there is with Chet, rightly or wrongly. Like, Chet's numbers did spike against worse teams this year. And I think that it would be very beneficial. And I'm still all in on Chet. Like, I think the reason that his numbers spiked was he just got more comfortable with the physicality of college basketball, and it took him more time to figure it out. But for me personally, I'm not the one drafting, right? Like, at the end of the day. And Chet, I think, for NBA teams, is going to have to prove that what he did in WCC play was not a function of playing worse players. More so than with Jabari Smith. So I would say Chet Holmgren's the guy who has the most to prove, because if he leads Gonzaga to a Final Four and leads him to a national title for the first time, I think there's pretty real chance that we look at Chet as, like, the clear guy. And I think the same could be said for Jabari, by the way. Like, Jabari leads Auburn to a national title. There's a chance that, like, he could be seen as, like, the guy in this draft, but more so with Chet. I think that Chet could be seen as the guy.
So of the remaining guys, like AJ Griffin, Keegan Murray, Johnny Davis, Jalen Duren, is there any possibility that any of those guys sneaks into the top four? Or do you think the top four is pretty solidified?
The name that I keep hearing, well, look, and let Shaedon Sharpe is not going to be playing March Madness. I think that he's a name worth mentioning within this. It would not surprise me if Shaedon Sharpe, if he declares for the draft, if he goes in the top four. Not a stunner at all. The name that I hear more than others in regard to potentially jumping into that top four range is weirdly Keegan Murray, actually. Look, I think that AJ Griffin certainly has a chance to do that as well. AJ Griffin is, if he has a great NCAA tournament and, like, dominates and scores 20 points per game, shoots 45% from three, wouldn't surprise me at all if he spiked over Paolo Banchero. Like, he's a great player, and he has the kind of attributes that NBA teams look for on the wing. But teams really like Keegan Murray. Like, they really like the production level. In a draft that outside of the top four guys, realistically, and outside, let's throw Johnny Davis away as well, because Johnny Davis has been very good as well. In a draft that has been questionable from a production standpoint for the most part, Keegan Murray is putting up one of the most productive college basketball seasons that I can remember, certainly. Mm-hmm. He's averaging like 23 points, 8 rebounds, shooting 39% from three. Or no, shooting I think like 36% from three. Shooting like 50% from the field. Like, he's been awesome. He's been really, really good. Yeah. And you look at all of the efficiency numbers, you look at the lack of turnovers, like, he's going to grade out, even though he's a little bit older and he's not going to play his first NBA game until he's 21 years old. I do think he's going to grade out really, really well within team models at the end of the day. So I have heard from, a couple of teams that, hey, you should be talking more about Keegan Murray than you are, essentially.
Interesting. It's an interesting one to watch. Okay, rank these three big guys. There's some interesting big guys kind of outside of this group. Mark Williams, Walker Kessler, and Jalen Duren.
That's gross, Andrew. I would go Duren, Williams, Kessler, personally.
Okay.
And it pains me to put Walker Kessler last because I think he's been the best defensive player in college basketball this year. Yeah. I worry about what his lateral quickness looks like just a little bit at the NBA level. Mm-hmm. I think Mark is a little bit more laterally quick. I think he's going to have an easier time not having guys turn the corner on him in space and drop coverage scenarios. And I think he's a cleaner fit out of ball screens in the dunker spot than Walker is offensively. Duren is purely tools based on some level, right? He's still so young. He's so, so young. He's still, I believe, 18 years old. And we're starting to see the signs of him scratching the surface and, like, really becoming what he can become. Memphis, for a large portion of this season, did not have anything resembling a point guard. Alex Lomax has stepped up throughout the course of AAC play and gotten to the point where he's a passable point guard that can get the ball to Jalen Duren in advantageous situations. He just had a 20-point game earlier this week and played really, really well on the defensive end. He is 6'11". He has a 7'6" wingspan. He is a real athlete, especially off of 2 feet. He is powerful. He is physical. I think his upside is higher than that of Mark Williams and Walker Kessler, even though the certainty of Walker Kessler and Mark Williams is probably a bit higher than it is with Jalen Duren, because they're just a little bit more effective than Jalen Duren is right now at the college level. And the reason for that is that, like, Walker's, I believe, almost 2 years older than Jalen Duren.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Duren's, is he the youngest guy in this draft class?
He's up there. I mean, look, I can't, like, run through the international class in my head right now.
Right.
I believe he would be the youngest among the college players in this class, though.
Yeah. He seems like an individual workout guy, too, where teams are going to bring him in. He's just going to be giant, and they may fall in love with him.
Yeah.
You talked about the international class. This is a pretty weak international draft class, but are there any guys that we should be on the lookout for that could be first-round prospects that are international?
I mean, look, like, Nikola Jovic could go in the first round, right? Dyson Daniels with the G League Ignite right now, I think he's the international player, along with Jeremy Sohan at Baylor, who are, like, most likely to go highly on draft night. Like, I guess Paolo Banchero is, like, considering Italian to play for the Italian national team, right? Look, it's not the best international class. Like, Nikola Jovic is probably the best international player in this class. Usman Jang in Australia has fans that are willing to just throw away everything that they've seen from him this year. In the NBL, because he's been terrible in the NBL. Like, he's been just dreadful. But He's 6'9", has real athletic tools, very real balance. He can create shots. He's a good passer. He can handle the ball a little bit for his size. He's a long-term project, like a significantly long-term project. But there, he could hear his name called at the end of the first round. I think Nikola Jovic, Jovic could end up hearing his name called, I don't know, like 20s on draft night. Okay. But this is not a strong international class. Like, the guy that I like most for where I think I would have to pick him is probably Gabriel Procida. He's an Italian kid that is playing well right now. 6'7" wing, can shoot the ball, has some athleticism, plays relatively hard defensively. But like, definitely still a project nonetheless with his frame. So this is just not a strong international class, to be completely transparent.
Okay. Last one. Give me a mid first round sleeper, a guy that you love that maybe not everybody else does.
A guy that I love that everybody else may not. That's a great question. I really like Malachi Branham at Ohio State.
Okay.
I think he is like a real potential like mid to late first round prospect. He's 6'5", has great length, has really improved as a shooter from his time on the prep level. He can get into pull-up jumpers at a pretty high level. He drives, he has a good mid-range game. He's not a phenomenal athlete. He's still working on his game defensively, but he's big, he's strong, he can get his shot. And in this draft, that's kind of enough for me.
I don't know. And he's super young, like almost pre-drafty, you think?
Yeah. To an extent, like teams are going to have to give him some assurances, like before I think he officially decides to enter the draft that he'll be a first round pick. Like I don't see him entering the draft to be like a 35th overall guy. So, I would imagine, here's the thing. Like, I would imagine that a lot of guys in that freshman class are probably going to test early to see where their stock lies and then go from there. I think that that's the smart move. This is an imperfect world. Not everyone does like the intelligent thing all the time. But I would imagine that we're going to see some guys test and we'll find out what the final draft pool looks like after that's finally accomplished.
Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show. Go follow Sam on Twitter and go read all of Sam's stuff on The Athletic. Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show.
I'm just bummed that Alex isn't here. I've for the next time, I have so many questions to ask you and Alex. I might create a trivia game myself about your band that you guys played in. Oh. That's okay. Actually what I need.
Okay. We can do this. We can make this happen next time for sure.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
All right, Andrew, it is time for the Wheel of Fandom, where each week we spin a digital wheel, it lands on a random NBA team, and we become fans of that team for the next week. This week, the wheel landed on the best team in the NBA, the Phoenix Suns. The Suns are without Chris Paul for at least the next 6 weeks, which means we get to see the Suns' first extended run without CP3 since the bubble. The early returns were mixed. After beating the Thunder last week, the Suns lost two home games to the Pelicans and Jazz before destroying the Blazers on Wednesday night, a game in which they also didn't have Devin Booker, who has entered health and safety protocols. The Suns are the first team to hit the 50-win mark at 50-12, the best record in the NBA. Andrew, if our team is the Suns, who is our guest?
We've got Mike V. Hill at Protected Pick on Twitter, who's the co-host of the Timeline podcast, a Suns podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Mike, thanks for coming on.
Hey, I appreciate you guys for having me.
So with Chris Paul out, this next stretch is an opportunity to see what other players on this roster can do with more responsibilities. One of those players is DeAndre Ayton, who will be restricted this summer. Who are you watching in this final stretch, or what will you be watching for from Ayton in this final stretch without Chris Paul?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's actually been an interesting ride for these first four games. In the first three games, where Devin Booker was playing before he was out with health and safety protocols, only 11 of DeAndre Ayton's 33 attempts were in the restricted area. So he was kind of forced outside of the restricted area and to take a lot of shots. In those shots that he was taking, he was still incredibly efficient. He was shooting basically 64% from mid-range in like the last 10 games or so. But it is tough to see somebody as big and with as good of a touch as him that far away from the basket. And I think that just shows the impact that Chris Paul has on DeAndre Ayton's game. Now, in this last game, Cameron Payne finally came back from his wrist injury, and he had seven shots in the restricted area as soon as Cameron Payne came back. So having a good point guard makes a big impact on his game. So for me, what I'd like to see is what he does now when he's catching the ball away from the rim. If that mid-range shot continues to fall for him, I think that's going to open up a lot for him in the future. But I'd like to see him find ways to get to the rim, maybe without all of that falling onto the point guard's shoulders and just sort of feeding him under the basket. So if that means one dribble, that would be nice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if the mid-range shot keeps falling, I think that's something that could help him a lot in the future as well.
So how confident are you and Suns fans in general that the Suns will be willing to pay to keep both Ayton and Cam Johnson, who's also extension eligible this summer?
Yeah, I'll be honest. With the way that Cameron Johnson has been playing lately, I think it has complicated it a little bit more. It's definitely possible. It's just with Robert Sarver as the owner of the team, you're putting a lot of faith. If you believe it's going to happen, you're putting a lot of faith into an owner that has made decisions in the past to help protect his wallet. So I wouldn't call myself incredibly confident in that. And I do think if it comes down to some sort of situation where they have to make a choice between those two players, that could be fascinating. Obviously, Ayton has a little more control in what happens than Cameron Johnson. Cameron Johnson still has another year left in his contract, in his rookie deal, whereas Ayton could sign an offer sheet with another team as early as soon as free agency opens, essentially. So it's going to be a fascinating situation. Cameron Johnson has been extremely good this season and is only really getting better as the season rolls on.
So another player whose development is of interest with CP3's absence is Mikal Bridges.
Yeah.
There was a good article on Bright Side of the Sun detailing how much more is being asked of the wings as far as initiating offense. As someone who's been watching him for the last 4 years, how far has his offensive game come, and what do you think his ceiling is or might be on the offensive end?
Yeah, you know, it's actually really interesting for Mikal Bridges in particular. He was, of course, drafted by the Philadelphia 76ers and then traded immediately afterwards. And I'm convinced that just that brief moment that he was on the Philadelphia 76ers briefly ruined his jump shot because for whatever reason, there was immediately a hitch in his jump shot that existed for essentially the first two seasons of his career in Phoenix. And he was still occasionally making shots, but the Suns, along with their shooting coach, slowly worked with him to get that hitch out of his jump shot. And of course, that was the main thing that needed to happen for him to stay on the court as much as he has not yet missed a game in the NBA and plays the most minutes on the Suns. So first he started being able to hit those corner shots. Now he's hunting mid-range shots in a way that I didn't really predict happening for him. Of course, he has the length, like the longest arms in the NBA when if you just look at him. But for him, I think the biggest hurdle that he needs to actually jump over is his ball handling. He doesn't have the tightest handles. He's not quite doing Jason Tatum things, of course, with the ball. He's still incredibly efficient, but until he's able to handle the ball a little bit better, I think it's going to be a little more difficult for him to be ultra aggressive with the ball without having a point guard to help feed him some of those shots.
Yeah. I'm curious about your thoughts on Monty Williams and the job that he's done. It's been hard to separate his impact from Chris Paul's impact, and not that you really even should be trying to do that.
Right.
But I'm just curious what your thoughts are on just like the early returns of the Suns without Chris Paul and with just Monty as their leader.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because the first season that Monty was on the team, they, of course, signed Ricky Rubio. And even though that season didn't end up with them making the playoffs, I think a big part of that was that DeAndre Ayton missed the first 25 games of the season when he was suspended for testing for a diuretic. And I think if he had played those 25 games, the Suns were essentially half a game out of the playoffs at the end of the season. It took the Trailblazers beating the Nets in the last game of the bubble in order to keep the Suns out of the playoffs because they won 8 in a row in the bubble. So, you know, I think if they had made the playoffs that year, maybe Monty Williams would get a little bit more credit for that specifically. But as someone who's watched every game, and I think a lot of Suns fans who did watch every game of that season as well, I think you could just tell that there was something changing as early as that season. And then that continued on with Chris Paul. This last stretch without Chris Paul is going to be pretty fascinating. I think Monty had a lot to juggle this season in that the Suns are very good, but they're also really young. You know, they made the finals last season. The only old player, old, I'm going to put in quotes, was Chris Paul on the team. Everyone else is pretty young. That means that they have to somehow juggle these guys developing over time while still trying to win now at this rate the most of any team in the NBA. And these last games, if there's any sort of blessing in disguise here, it's that some of the younger guys will have some more freedom to take a little more shots or do a little bit more on the offensive end before the playoffs. And then assuming Chris Paul is able to come back, then of course they can do that. But I think Monty has done a really good job finding ways to allow these young guys to develop on this team while still winning games, which I think is a really impressive thing to do.
Yeah, that's a great point. So let's look ahead to the playoffs. Assuming full health, what do you think makes this Suns team better than the team we saw last year go to the finals?
Yeah. You know, before the NBA season, we did a series of Arrested Development-themed podcasts that we called Internal Development. And what that was about was the fact that there are multiple young players on this team that are young enough that they will continue to improve. Now that's, I think, step one for this team. Devin Booker, still very young, still improving. And then of course they still have Mikal Bridges, Cameron Johnson, even Cameron Payne, who really has played less than you would think in the NBA for how long he was in the NBA, of course, was out and then came back. And DeAndre Ayton, of course, the number one overall pick. The first step for them was that experience, making the playoffs for the first time in Devin Booker's career, for the first time for Mikal Bridges, for the first time for DeAndre Ayton. That, I think, was a lesson learned for them. They figured out what it takes to win at that level. And even beyond that, they were able to make the NBA Finals. And for them, just understanding what it takes is a big step in the right direction. And knowing where to improve their game to continue to win beyond that. Now, of course, the players that are older in Chris Paul and Jay Crowder need to remain healthy for them to be good in the playoffs. But I think the first step was for those guys to really improve. Now, beyond that, really, they just added Landry Shamet and JaVale McGee. Like, those are the big additions to this team this season. JaVale's been great.
Yeah.
Landry Shamet has been somewhat of a disappointment, and maybe I'm underselling that from how actual Suns fans feel about Landry Shamet. Yeah. Somehow, every player that has joined this Suns team under Monty Williams has career years offensively. But Landry Shamet is shooting the worst percentages of his career so far on the Suns. It's very odd. I really don't have a reason for why that's happening. But yeah, he hasn't been a big difference maker. So for the Suns, it's really internal development. I think that makes him better.
So with Memphis and Golden State looking like they're going to be on the other side of the bracket, who is the first or second round matchup that Suns fans are most worried about? Utah, Denver, Dallas? Is there a play-in team anybody's afraid of?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Suns just got killed by New Orleans. Not that I'm entirely scared of them. I don't know. Maybe if Zion comes back and they somehow click, that could be a little scarier of a team, you know. But beyond that, you know, the Clippers could be, I guess the Clippers could be a play-in team, and who knows what happens with the guys that could be healthy on that team. Because, you know, if all of a sudden Kawhi's back, or Kawhi and Paul George, or even just one of those two guys, you know, who knows what could happen. Injury luck goes against you the way that it sort of favored them last season, then it's a little worrisome at that point. You know, who knows if Chris Paul even plays the first few games of the playoffs. We'll see where he's at that point. 6 to 8 weeks technically puts him into the first week of the NBA playoffs. And then beyond that, I guess it depends on the matchups. You know, Denver is pretty interesting because they have guys that are coming back. Of course, Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr. I think the Suns really did a great job targeting him, even though he is a great offensive player. I do think there are some defensive issues with him that the Suns were able to take advantage of. And if he's coming back from an injury, you know, maybe that's something they can continue to do. But yeah, beyond that, I think the biggest threats, of course, are the teams that you mentioned at the top there, which is of course Golden State and Memphis. And who knows what'll end up happening with those two teams as well, as far as where they'll end up falling at the end of the season.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for answering our questions, but it is now time to play Andrew versus the Beat, our weekly trivia show where Andrew goes head to head with a beat writer for an NBA team. This week it's Mike Vigil, co-host of the Timeline Podcast. Mike, how this works: I've come up with 8 trivia questions about the Suns. Some are easy, some are hard. You're going to give me a number between 1 and 8. It'll correspond to a question. If you get it right, you get 2 points. If you get it wrong, Andrew will have a chance to steal for 1. We'll go back and forth until all the questions have been asked and answered. So will you start me off with a number between 1 and 8?
I'm just going to go right for number 1.
Oh, great choice. The Phoenix Suns mascot, known simply as the Gorilla, was not always the Suns mascot. The Suns actually tried to introduce a mascot prior to the Gorilla, but it never took off. What was the first failed Suns mascot? Now I'm going to give you 5 options. One of them is correct.
Can I just guess?
Okay, if you know it, I will give you a bonus point. You could get 3 points if you get it right.
Oh no.
I think I know it.
Okay. Are you sure? Are you sure you want to risk it? You could hear 5 names.
I will feel good if I get this, so I have to try. Is it a sunflower?
It was a sunflower. Right. Yes, it was. Andrew, would any of these fooled you? Coyote, giant star, alien, sunflower, or live goat? What do you think you would have guessed there?
Definitely not alien or live goat. I'm not.
Sunflower definitely sounds fake.
Yeah, sunflower.
It doesn't sound real.
Could have gone with star, like sun is a star, you know, stuff like whatever. Yeah, I could have. Well, that's probably where I would have gone.
That was an impressive first answer from Mike. Yeah. Andrew, you're already behind.
Number 2.
Question number 2. DeAndre Ayton is currently shooting over 63% on 11 attempts per game. In the last decade, there are only 4 players who have shot over 60% on at least 10 attempts per game. How many can you name? You could potentially get 4 points here, Andrew, because I'm going to give you 1 point per correct answer. So again, this is shooting over 60% for an entire season on at least 10 attempts per game. It's only been done 4 other times in the last decade.
Holy smokes.
So you got to think of like hyper-efficient players.
Yeah. Did Capella do it?
Clint Capella in 2018-19 did do it. You're on the board. You want to throw out a name?
Jakob Poeltl?
Jakob Poeltl. We were just talking about Jakob Poeltl. No, that's incorrect.
Okay.
I wonder how close Jakob is, though. You know, now that you bring him up, I'm kind of interested. Let's go take a look at Jakob Poeltl's basketball reference page. You know, he is. Oh, wow, Andrew. You were super close. He is shooting 62% on 9.8 attempts per game.
Jacob.
Wow. Oh. Okay, Mike, you have a chance. You could get 3 points right here if you know.
There's one. I have one guess, and it's DeAndre Jordan.
DeAndre Jordan, a great guess, but somehow incorrect.
Wow.
So his thing must have been that he just didn't take enough.
I was going to say attempts. Maybe he didn't get 10.
Yeah, because he has like the highest field goal percentage for any like high volume player ever, right, or something like that.
Yeah, because he shot 71%. That was the year he made the All-Star game. I did not remember him making the All-Star game.
I was hoping there would be two Chris Paul teammates in there. a Chris Paul stat.
I was seeing if there. Well, no, Montrez was not playing with Chris Paul. Montrez Harrell was on this list. Hassan Whiteside. And then the only one you may have gotten, if you thought about it a little longer, Zion last year.
Of course. Wow.
I forget he played basketball.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, Mike. The board is yours.
I guess I got to go three.
In a row. This is very exciting. Okay. Which Sun has hit at least one three-pointer in 19 straight games, the longest current streak on the team?
I'm going to say Cameron Johnson.
That is correct. And when I told you there was an easy question, that was the easy one.
Yeah.
Especially since Devin Booker, the other person it could be, was out on Wednesday night. Yeah, kind of made it even
that
easier.
Did help.
Okay, Andrew, back to you.
Number four.
JaVale McGee has played for 8 NBA franchises, including the Phoenix Suns. We're not going to name all of his teams, but with which franchise did JaVale have his highest points per game average over a season with 12 points per game?
Not the Suns. Probably not the Wizards. It's probably either the Nuggets or the Lakers, maybe?
Are you picking one of those?
Yes.
Or are you just giving Mike options for when you get it wrong?
I'm gonna say it's the Lakers because it's weirder. Lakers.
Andrew, that is correct for 2 points. All right. Mike, do you want to go to number 5?
Yeah, I guess, I guess I have to.
Don't break the streak.
Okay, now before you answer this, there's an extra part of it, so wait before answering.
Okay.
How many career triple-doubles does Chris Paul have? Now, how this works, you get to pick who guesses first. So either you can guess first, and then Andrew will get to choose higher or lower than your number, or you can make Andrew guess first, and then you get to guess higher or lower. Mm. Now, if you let Andrew guess first, you risk that he could get it exactly, but you also have a little bit more wiggle room in terms of, like, based on what he says.
Right. I think I'm going to let Andrew pick a number and try and... Because I don't know it. I think I know, but yeah, that's a tough one.
Okay, so Andrew, how many career triple-doubles does Chris Paul have?
I don't know this either. 6.
6. Mike, would you like to go higher or lower than that?
I got to go higher than that.
Yes, it is higher than that. Why would you guess 6?
I don't
That's know. So low.
Can I estimate it's in the 40s?
It's not. It's
too much?
18.
Okay, wow.
That's what,
yeah,
see,
so I
put that in there because I thought it was surprising it was only 18. I was trying to come up with, and we were so close to being able to make this a trivia question, Elfrid Payton has 17.
Yeah.
And so he's like two away from having more triple-doubles than Chris Paul, which would have been a fun question.
A few on the Suns because he's had 2 stints, Elfrid Payton, on the Suns.
Yeah.
Okay, Andrew, I'm assuming you want question number 6.
I do.
Okay. List these Phoenix Suns vets in order from most playoff games played to fewest playoff games played.
Okay.
We're doing Landry Shamet, JaVale McGee, Torrey Craig.
JaVale first.
Okay.
Oh, this is tough. Shamet, Craig.
That is incorrect. Mike, you have a chance to steal.
Wow, that's... what I would have guessed. So I guess I'm glad that you said that it has to be JaVale because JaVale has multiple championship runs. So it must be JaVale, Craig, then Shamet.
That is correct. It's closer than you think, though. JaVale has played 62 playoff games. Torrey Craig, 55.
Wow.
55.
Huh.
I mean, he went on that run last year with the Suns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I don't even know who else. Denver. Yeah,
Bucks.
He had two seasons with Denver.
Yeah.
Okay, Mike, you have a commanding lead. I don't think I gave you a point for that. So you is currently 8-3.
Ooh.
Wow, high score.
That's bad.
High score. Okay, question number 7, since we're going in order.
All right.
It's for Mike. In the last 5 seasons, going back to the 2017-18 season, there have been 16 40-point games by a Phoenix Suns player. 14 of those 16 came from Devin Booker. Who were the other two Suns in the last 5 years to have a 40-point game? And I will give you 1 point per correct answer.
40-point game in the last 5 years.
Only 3 Suns have done it. Devin Booker and these two gentlemen.
Okay. I'm going to say Kelly Oubre.
That is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal, and you could get 2 points here, Andrew. If you know who scored 40 points for the Suns in the last 5 years.
What about TJ Warren?
Yes, TJ Warren is one of them.
That's a good guess. Okay.
If you get the other one, I will be very impressed.
Oh, you know what? I know who it is.
Because it's kind of a funny one.
It is. It is.
I don't know. I don't know the other
one. Mike, you want to say who it was?
Jamal Crawford?
It was Jamal Crawford.
Yeah. Last game of the season, I think.
God,
yeah.
I forgot about that. I forgot that it was with the Suns.
Yeah.
Okay, Andrew, you could still get 2 points right here. And would it help you win? No. But it would make it one of our highest scoring games ever. Mikal Bridges has one of the more creative list of nicknames on his Basketball Reference page. Which of the following nicknames is not a real nickname associated with Mikal Bridges? So I'm going to read you 5 nicknames. One of them is made up, okay?
Okay.
Noodles, Praying Mantis, String Bean, Inspector Go-Go Gadget, or Sebastian. Once again, that was Noodles, Praying Mantis, String Bean, Inspector Go-Go Gadget, or Sebastian.
String Bean?
That is incorrect. Mike, you have a chance to steal for 1 more point.
Okay. I want to give a shout out, first of all, to his best nickname, which is The Warden.
Yes, and I did
he
not
locks
put
people up.
That was the one I knew, so I didn't want to include that.
Sebastian?
Yes, I made up Sebastian. I thought it was so stupid that it might trick someone. It did trick Andrew.
Yeah.
I was like, that makes no sense. There's got to be like some backstory to Sebastian. It's got to be Noodles or String Bean. No,
Mike, that was a dominating win, similar to the Suns over the Blazers. That was 9-4. Mike Vigil wins Andrew versus the Beat.
Wow. You never want to be compared to this current iteration of the Blazers. Mike, thanks so much for joining the show.
Of course,
be
of
sure
course.
To go listen to the Timeline Podcast. Great show. It just had JJ Redick on, which is a really fun episode. So go check that out. Follow Mike on Twitter at ProtectedPick. Mike, thanks again, man.
Appreciate you guys.
Okay. Thank you again to Mike Vigil. We are going to choose a new team, though. Putting the Suns in our rearview mirror and going to pick a new team for next week. Who's it going to be? We've got 23 remaining teams. A lot of great options, some terrible options. Let's see what we get, Andrew. Spinning the wheel.
Terrible options. Oh,
our
on, wheel
of fandom team for next week will be the Boston Celtics.
Ooh, my turnaround team, Boston Celtics. Oh, they've had kind of a weird past week. Let's get some good Celtics momentum going into the Wheel of Fame.
Yeah, they lost to the Pacers and they also lost to the Pistons recently, but they're also like one of the best teams. Very confusing.
Yeah. It's very confusing. We'll have to break it all down next Saturday. Before we go, I'm going to read a couple 5-star Apple Podcast reviews. If you want your review read, just write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Make sure you put Slam and Jam somewhere in there, and we will read it. This one comes from Physics is Groovy. He says, love to catch up with all my NBA news with the Saturday Slam and Jam. I can't have my slam without my jam. Thanks for the excellently paced and produced show with a laugh-out-loud trivia segment that I can't go without.
Love, your number one fan in Round Rock, Texas. Thank you so much for that review. And our last review today comes from MC2250. It says, great info with entertainment along the way. Let's go, Andrew. I can't tell if I'm cheering for the favorite or the underdog at this point. Excellent work, guys. Definitely the dog today. Thanks so much for listening to the Saturday Slam and Jam. Hope you guys enjoy your weekend and the basketball. And we will talk to you guys again next week.